I love this whole episode. I love it. Last week and this week, Matthew 22 is amazing because it shows Jesus the Lord, yes. Jesus the teacher, yes. Jesus the Messiah, not quite. Jesus the savage, absolutely. It's hard to believe what's unfolding right before our very eyes in these two parts that we heard last week and this week, okay? Last week, it was the Pharisees versus the Herodians, okay? The Pharisees are loyal to the law, the Jewish law, and the Herodians are loyal to Herod and to Rome, right? So Jesus knows, if I say, you know, do we pay the census tax? Jesus knows, okay, if I say no, then I'm going to make the Herodians upset, and they might revolt. But if I say yes, then I'm going to make the Pharisees upset because I'm denying the Jewish priority. So what does he do? He says what to us is sort of obvious, but to them, because they were not really interested in what Jesus had to say, they just wanted Jesus to affirm their own position, to prove once and for all that he had allied himself with one side or the other. But Jesus says, aha, it's not one or the other, it's both. Oh. To us, that's obvious. To them, not so much. So then this week, literally the very next verse, when the Pharisees heard that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together, and one of them, a scholar of the law, tested him by asking. So the Pharisees and the Sadducees, they're not usually in cahoots with each other, because they disagree with each other about theological matters, okay? But the Pharisees and the Sadducees find themselves in cahoots against Jesus. So whether they want to acknowledge it or not, Jesus has brought them together. Wow, powerful. All right. He's trolling them at their own game. So they're together, and now the scholars of the law step up again. And they say, "Teacher, which commandment in the law is the greatest?" That's a loaded question, right? How many laws are there in the Jewish law? Are there 10? Who thinks there's more than 10? Is there more than 20? Who thinks there's more than 100? How many of you know the number? If you know it, tell me what it is. 600? Higher than that. 613. Mrs. Basie, you were so close. You know, but I'm a stickler for these things, okay? You don't become a world-famous professor by giving up 13 laws just to make everybody look good. You know what I mean, Mrs. Basie? It's the least I can do is just be faithful, you know? 613 laws. And they're saying to him on the fly, "Hey, Jesus, which of those is the greatest? Which of those is the greatest?" And Jesus doesn't say, well, I think maybe it's the one about no meat and cheese together. Or maybe it's the one about you can't wear cotton and polyester together. No. He says, there's not a single law that's the greatest. I'm going to give you the greatest two laws. What? You know? In the reading last week, they said, "Jesus, you don't ask anybody for their opinion," because that was all the scholars of the law are used to doing, right? People come to them, "Hey, what's your opinion? Here's my problem in my real life. I'm having this conflict, this conflict, this conflict. What do I do? What does the law say to do?" Well, you don't regard anyone's opinion. Of course not. Again, without saying it, he's trolling them at their own game. So then finally he says, "This is the greatest commandment. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the greatest and the first commandment." Why is that important? Because he just got done saying, "Give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and to God what belongs to God." And by answering in this way, he's saying, what belongs to God? your whole heart and mind and soul and strength and body and will, the whole of your very life belongs to God. And Jesus is saying to them, as we can say, I think, in our own day, that the temptation is to give too much to Caesar. Certainly, too much, you know, $1 in taxes is too much for a priest who has no money anyway. But it's more than that. We give our minds to Caesar. We give our bodies to Caesar. We give our attention to Caesar. But only in the God-Caesar argument, only one of those has asked for heart, mind, soul, body, and strength. And it's not Caesar. It's God. And then he goes on. This is the first and the greatest commandment, period. And you can picture it, can't you? You can picture the one of the Sadducees after he's done saying, this is the first and greatest commandment. You can see him opening his mouth to speak, and then Jesus goes on. The second greatest commandment is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. The whole law and the prophets depend on these two commandments. This is amazing, because Jesus, at the earlier parts of the gospel, remember, he does a miracle and then he looks at them and says, don't tell anybody that I did it. Not yet. My time has not yet come. Don't tell these people what happened to you. My time has not yet come. And it's so beautiful to witness Jesus now, as we get close to the end of Matthew's gospel, we only have 6 chapters left, to witness him coming to the end of the gospel. He's getting closer to Jerusalem. I think in the next chapter, chapter 23, is when he goes to Jerusalem, I think. Mrs. Basie, do you know? Because I don't know that one. He gets there, and of course he goes to be crucified. So you can see him slowly coming into his own. He becomes more confident, more sure. He becomes more outspoken. He went to therapy and now he's feeling better about himself and so he's more confident, you know. He didn't read any Brené Brown books, I don't think, although maybe he did. Those are good books. But he's coming into his own. He's accepting, out of fidelity to the Father, his mission. Not just to die and rise, but to teach, to usher in the new kingdom. Before he dies, he ushers it in with his teaching. Okay. As we know, we don't have to say it too much. These are crucial times for us. These are crucial weeks. Amen? We're feeling the pressure. We're feeling a little bit maybe at odds with one another over our decisions, especially our decisions about which bubble we're going to fill in or have already filled in. I'm hearing more stories lately from friends or from people around that they're losing friends. People are pushing them away once it's revealed who they're voting for. People on both sides. No, 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 no. That's not going to happen anymore. Why? Let me put it to you this way. Trump's not coming to your birthday party. Joe Biden's not going to watch your kids or babysit your dog or water your plants. Donald Trump's not going to graduate from college and expect you to be there. Joe Biden is not going to be coming to your retirement party or celebrating your wedding shower. That there are real people in our lives, real people with real brains and real hearts, who we find ourselves at odds with. And for what? For what? We're called to be Christians. I said this during one of the daily masses this week. Remember the words of St. Thérèse of Lisieux. The world is our ship, not our homeland. And yet, for some reason, we're tempted to plant our flags here. To plant our roots here, to make all kinds of mess and to yell and scream and get what we want here, as if this is the only thing. Is it wrong to be invested in an election? No, Is it wrong to believe this and that and this and that about people who we're going to elect? No, it's not wrong at all. But to give everything to the one who's never asked anything of us and neglect the one who has asked everything, that's the problem. And you should only give everything to the one who has given everything, to the one who has promised you everything, not worldly happiness necessarily, but the fulfillment of every one of your desires here on this earth if we would let him. So from the Catholic perspective, what can we say? You look at either candidate and you say, neither candidate is a good candidate from the Catholic perspective. That's the end of it. They have their strengths and weaknesses both. So inform your conscience, know the faith, know the truth, and then vote your conscience. That's what I have to say. But in the meantime, we owe to each other the benefit of the doubt. We owe to each other an outstretched arm. We owe to each other a mowing of the lawn every now and then, a shoveling of the sidewalk every now and then, a house sitting, a plant watering every now and then. We owe our humanity to each other because we're all we have in this world, you see? If we push everyone away, next thing you know, everyone's been pushed away. The Pharisees and the Sadducees, they tried and they tried and they tried and they tried to trick Jesus. And what Jesus teaches us is that it's not going to be found in this extreme or in that extreme, but in some combination of the two. And in the meantime, God is still good. Do you believe that? God is still good. 2020 stinks. Let's get over it. Let's move on from it, you know? 2020 is the worst. It's okay to say that, but also to say that God is still good. God will be as good on November 4th as he was on December 31st, 2019. Amen? And we need to be people who go out into the world and live as if that's true. We need to be people who go out into the world and live in these days differently. Not succumb, not taken over by all this nonsense. Invested in it, aware of it, fine. But people should look at us and they should say, you people are living this differently. You people are going about this differently. Where's your hope coming from? Why are you joyful still? Don't you know? And you say, this is the ship, not the homeland. And I'm not going to throw away the promises of what lies ahead for the disagreements on the boat. Jesus trolls these people. He's so good at it. He's so good at convincing them at their own game. So, you realize what we're about to do, right? I'm going to consecrate bread and wine, and then together, we're going to eat God. And he's going to live within us. And we're going to go out of here as people who have God, not just in our hearts, not just in our minds, not just in our sights. We're going to go out of here as people who have God in our intestine tract. People who have God becoming a part of our own body. So that by reverse osmosis, by beating us at our own game, it's not that he becomes like us and that's the end of it, but by him becoming like us physically, we become like him in every way. We become lights on the hill. We become salt for the earth. We become joy and hope for those that we meet. Are we equal to our mission? I'd like to say yes. I'd like to say yes. Are we equal to the mission? Some, in many ways, yes. Most of us, in many ways, we got some work to do. But receive him worthily, take him out of here, and look at the people who despair in the world and say to them, maybe not with your words, if it happens to be with your words, fine. But let's go out of this place and into this neighborhood and say, come and meet this person who I know, who has saved me from myself, who has saved me from the darkness. Come and meet this person who has given me everything. These are the two greatest commandments. Love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. It's a tall order, but I think we can do it. You think? Let's give it a whirl.